On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute and a half past the hour. It is Friday. It is a beautiful Friday here in what's left of the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, almost level West Virginia. A beautiful day. A beautiful day made a little less so, I must admit, by the Obama administration. I know you're sick of hearing that. I know you're sick of hearing me complain about it. But daggummit, one of these days I'm going to get some of that change I voted for, baby. But it ain't happening now. It ain't happening now. No, the all that change we were hoping for from the Environmental Protection, the EPA, no, not so much. We got the shiv put in a couple of times today, friends and neighbors. It is friends and neighbors because it is Front Porch Friday. Late in the Friday afternoon, the work week's over. Here in the hills and hollers, we step up on the front porch and sit back, relax. The week's end, have a seat in a rocking chair. Maybe somebody's got a little guitar. Maybe somebody plink out a few notes on a banjo. Maybe somebody pick up that crockery jug over in the corner, the one with the corn cob stopper, and take a slash. Maybe just go for the sweet cider instead. Watch the day come to its end here in mid-spring. It is the 15th day of May, 2009. I hope it's as beautiful where you are as it is where I am. Minus the blasting. Minus the ammonium nitrate particulates in the air. Minus the dust, the silica, minus the aerosolized diesel fuel. I hope it's as nice where you are as where I am. Gotta wonder if there's any particulated ammonium nitrate dust in the air of Washington, D.C. Any aerosolized diesel fuel, any silica. Because there's something in the air there, and it makes people think crazy. Bad crazy. Yeah, we got the, I'll let Jeff Biggers say it better than I could hope to. This out today at Huffington Post. You can read it for yourself, Jeff Biggers, in the green section. Breaking: EPA clears waterboarding permits for Appalachia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeff writes, as American citizens, and remember, they are American citizens, no matter how hard we try to forget that fact. As American citizens in Mingo County and other areas of the flood-stricken Kentucky and West Virginia coal fields continue to dig themselves out of the muck, indefatigable Charleston Gazette reporter Ken Ward is reporting on his coal tattoo blog that the EPA has, quote, signed off on almost 87.5%, to be exact, almost all of the mountaintop removal permits that has so far been reviewed under the initiative announced in March. Remember when we talked about that back in March? We actually had some hope. We had some of that hope that there'd be some of that change we can believe in. Because the EPA said it was going to review some mountain removal permits to see if they were the right thing for Appalachia and the almost American citizens who live here. Well, they did. And they've decided to say, hey, go ahead, with 87.5% of them. 87.5% of the communities that will be ruined forever, destroyed forever, irrevocably changed, poisoned, flooded, blown up, blown out by mountain removal. 87.5% of those affected areas, well, they don't get no change they can believe in. They don't get no hope. Mm-mm, no, sir. They get more of the same. They get politics they can't believe in. They get waist-deep mud from flash flood runoff. They get their little towns and their hollers ruined. They get their homes washed away. This is language from a letter dated yesterday from the Environmental Protection Agency to U.S. Representative Nick Rahal, my congressman, 3rd District of West Virginia. It reads as follows, and I quote, EPA has raised environmental concerns with 6 pending permit applications in the Corps' Huntington District out of a total of approximately 48 we have reviewed. We have advised the Corps that EPA does not intend to provide additional comments on the remaining 42 permits. The Corps may proceed with appropriate permit decisions on those remaining projects. That's right. Appalachian people, you know, almost Americans, in areas affected by 42 out of 48 permits, are not worthy of additional comments. People in 42 out of 48 communities affected by pending, you know, these aren't the ongoing operations that are already ruining Appalachia. These are newbies. These are noobs. And the people in 42 out of those 48 communities don't count. Don't matter. Don't exist. Gone. Poison them. Blast them. Devastate them. Flood them. Fly rock them. Crack their foundations. Destroy their wells. They don't matter. They don't get change they can believe in, and they damn sure don't get any of that much vaunted hope. Yeah. It would appear, as Jeff Biggers notes, that those permits have been deemed by the Environmental Protection Agency to be environmentally responsible. And Jeff Biggers is correct. He says, in effect, residents in the mountaintop removal areas have been subjected to a kind of waterboarding environmental policies. This crime against nature will be perpetrated on them. Mr. Biggers writes, the EPA's letter to Rahal is a curious document. Acting Assistant Administrator Michael H. Shapiro writes, I understand the importance of coal mining in Appalachia for jobs, the economy, and meeting the nation's energy needs. I also want to emphasize the need to ensure that coal mining is conducted in a manner that is fully consistent with the requirements of the Clean Water Act, the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, and other applicable federal laws. Damn! All them laws and not one of them can save an Appalachian community. Not one. 1.2 million acres of hardwood forest erased already. 500 mountains erased already. More to come. Joe Lovett is a lawyer for the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment. He testified in an oversight hearing of the U.S. House Committee on Natural Resources on the 30th anniversary of the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act, that most ineffective little legislative boondoggle. He said, when Congress passed the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act in 1977, it thought that it was enacting a law to protect the environment and citizens of the region. OSM has used, the Office of Surface Mining, has used and has allowed the states to use the act as a perverse tool to justify the very harm that Congress sought to prevent. The members of Congress who voted to pass the act in 1977 could not have imagined the cumulative destruction that would be visited on our region by the complete failure of the regulators to enforce the act. You know, I've told you a little bit about Maria Gano, recent winner of the Goldman Prize for Environmental Activism, the Environmental Nobel, if you will. In his story at Huffington Post, Jeff embeds these comments from Maria. You deserve to hear them. You deserve to hear them. She lives in Bob White, West Virginia, at the foot of a mountain removal operation.
In the past 5 years, they have been doing mountaintop removal coal mining up here, and they have filled this valley with what used to be the mountaintop. So basically, they'll plug this entire valley. They just fill it in. They've completely changed everything back here. There's nothing about it that hasn't changed. Common sense tells me when you turn a mountaintop into a barren wasteland, to be honest with you, there's something that's going to happen at the bottom of that mountain. I've lived here 37 years, and there's never been anything happen like the floods that's taken place over the last 4.5, 5 years. In 2003, when I was flooded, about 4 o'clock it started raining. Within 45 minutes, I was already being flooded. Within 2 hours, I lost my property, my bridges, around 5 acres of land was just washed away. We had nowhere to go. We had no way to get away from it. The water had already ate up to about 5 foot back on the sidewalk, and I hit my knees in the middle of it and said, please, you know, don't let it take me home. And I feel very fortunate. My kids lost quite a bit. They're scared of the water. There's any time it rains, they don't sleep. It was a direct effect of mountaintop removal coal mining up here. There's nothing left here to absorb the rain.
She's right, you know. Because, as I've mentioned on a number of occasions, this is one of the world's largest temperate rainforests. Really, it is a rainforest. Oh, granted, we don't have ocelots or jaguars or really the colorful parrots and macaws and so forth hooting away in the woods. Kind of glad we don't have the jaguars. Agnes would probably tame one and try to bring it home. Come here, baby. You know, we just dodged that lion by a little bit, if you follow the program. It's a rainforest. It rains a lot here. It's not rain. It rains a lot here because it's supposed to. That's the way the climate works here. That's why you have a Tennessee River. That's why you have an Ohio River. An Allegheny. A Monongahela. A Potomac. Have I missed any? A Kentucky River. It rains a lot here. And from time immemorial, literally, we've dealt with it. Because the soil on the mountains soaks up the rain. What isn't soaked up drains away in little rills between the hills that are beautiful places. Crawdads and salamanders under rocks. Moss on their tops. The earth on these mountaintops is rich, but it is scarce. It is thin. It is made up of the rotting leaf matter of hardwood trees that drop their leaves every year in a cycle that has gone on for as long as there have been hardwood trees after these mountains were raised up above the swamps and seas that they once were so many millions of years ago. It rains. It rains, and it's a beautiful rain. My son, the other day, Ferg, it was pouring. It was pouring a rain that would destroy Gilbert, West Virginia. But we're on a high place, and it was just wet and soggy. Makes it a little frustrating waiting for the ground to dry so maybe you can turn your land and get your tomatoes in or your cucumbers or whatnot. Don't reckon there'll be a garden here this year. But it was one of those rains that happened so locally that you can see the sunshine and somewhere else. So there was bright sunshine outside, but rain just pouring down. And my son, during the program, opened the door and was standing there in the doorway. And he was beautiful. I don't say that about boys very often, and I damn sure wouldn't say it with him in the room. But he was beautiful. Standing there in a pair of ripped blue jeans, nothing but, barefoot, no shirt on, soaked to the bone in the warm Appalachian rains of spring. The warm Appalachian rains of spring that we have counted on for eons. That some of our people, I know that, for instance, Maria Gonneau has a significant amount of First Peoples blood running through her veins, and they have counted on those rains for tens of thousands of years. Because they bring life, not devastation. They bring the promise of a fruitful harvest in the fall. They bring the promise of bountiful gathering in the woods, whether it be ginseng, ramps, mushrooms, berries, slippery elm bark for curative powers, burdock root, golden seal. They bring a promise. But now, with 500 mountains denuded, 500 mountains bereft of their ability to do within nature what these mountains have done for eons, with their topsoil gone and their trees eliminated, their breasts bared and lain naked before a merciless sun and merciless rain-bearing clouds, they are a horror. A horror. And Maria does not exaggerate. Children go to bed in fear when the rain comes now in the places where the servants of holy prophet, P-R-O-F-I-T, prophet, where the servants of holy prophet do their worshiping, their bloody, filthy, poisonous worshiping. Children go to bed in fear. And from the Obama administration today, the Merchants of Hope
the merchants of change, the agents of change, the people who told us to be the change that we wanted to see in the world. From them today comes word that the only change we will see, we semi-Americans, we demi-Americans, we not quite Americans, we Appalachians, the only change we will see, sunshine, is that it's gonna get worse. It's gonna get a whole lot worse. It's gonna get a hell of a lot worse. And you know, usually when you hear that it's gonna get worse part, there's a dependent clause that follows it that says it's gonna get worse before it gets better. You know, you've heard that. Like the economy, it's gonna get worse before it gets better. Well see, in Appalachia, we don't get the second phrase! We don't get that dependent clause! It's just gonna get worse. Going to be more poison. Going to be more toxins. Going to be more rock flying through the air. Going to be more children living in fear. Going to be more sludge dams leaking at the toe. Going to be more streams buried. Gonna be more, and it ain't gonna get better. Because the Obama administration has said to Appalachia, I understand the importance of coal mining in Appalachia for jobs, the economy, and meeting the nation's energy needs. What a freighted sentence that is. The nation's energy needs. Mr. President, what about Appalachia's needs? What about the needs of children? What about the needs of generations who hope to call themselves Americans, who are as yet unborn and even perhaps undreamt of? What about their needs? Are they simply sacrificed, Mr. President? Are they simply to be sacrificed on the altar of holy profit? Are their breasts to be ripped bare for the sake of the nation's energy needs? I want an answer! God damn it, I want an answer! I deserve an answer! We deserve an answer! Hear the crickets? Yeah, me too. Me too. This is activist radio. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This used to be a real nice neighborhood, to the company moving down the block. They took away everything that was good, left us nothing here but rocks. This is where I played as a kid, and I dangled my feet in the stream right here, while the trees swayed over. My heart cry out loud.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
Yeah, we're sorry. Gosh, we're sorry, coal industry. We're sorry, EPA. We're sorry, Secretary Salazar. We're sorry, Administrator Jackson. Our damn homes are in your way. You're under the impression that we live where they mine coal, not that they mine coal where we live. Dadgum, I'm just all brokenhearted. I wish, you know, we just probably all need to go somewhere else, don't we? Only that's called ethnic cleansing, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Now, I want to be square. By the way, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333, if you want to save us a little bit on the toll-free charges. Jump in. It's Friday, man. Don't wait till 15 minutes before the program's over and then try to do an auctioneer phone call. This is conversation radio. Ain't no hurry. Let's be realistic. Realism's tough because usually it involves swallowing something bitter and nasty that you wouldn't do otherwise. We want a lot of things from Barack Obama. See, I'm one of those liberals who can walk and chew gum at the same time, and I want a bunch of stuff. I want universal single-payer health care, and I will stand shoulder to shoulder with anyone who will demand that. I want marriage equity. And contrary to the opinions of hate-filled, right-wing, bigoted preachers, I'm not even gay. But I will, by God, stand next to anybody who will fight tirelessly and without ceasing for constitutional rights to be afforded as they should be to every American and not just a select few. I am that person's ally. I want gender equity. I want a level playing field for anyone in the workplace. I want the same day's dollar for the same day's work for every human being who gets up and goes to work in this country and carries our betters on their backs. Male, female, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. I want those things, and I will advocate for those things for as long as there is breath left in me. I want the Employee Free Choice Act. I want the freedom of association guaranteed in the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States to actually mean something. I want to make the First Amendment something more than a life support system for the damned religion industry. I want that. And I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with anybody else who's willing to fight for it. Because I'm just that liberal, and I'm just that free. And it is just that critical that America have all these things if there is to be an America worth talking about in 20 years. It is just that important. You and I, we have work to do. We have obligations to meet. We have what Robert Frost called miles to go before we sleep. I want all those things. And we will have all those things. But I can't stand shoulder to shoulder with anybody and fight for those things. I can't lock arms with the gay community and fight for constitutional rights for them. I cannot lock arms with the women's movement and fight for pay equity for them. And for reproductive health for them. I can't do it. I can't fight and advocate for labor rights for every working America. American. I can't do it. I can't fight for a reform of our election system. I can't fight to get the filthy lobbyist money out of Washington, D.C., I can't do it. I can't do any of these things if I'm being blasted out of my home and my neighbors are being blasted out of theirs. Because that's a little bit more immediate. Can't do it. And if I am willing to stand shoulder to shoulder with all those groups, I need all those groups to stand shoulder to shoulder with me in my fight. I said we were going to talk a little bit of reality. And we are. Reality spoken here. The nature of our political process is compromise. And the nature of compromise is that nobody's happy at the end of one. When we want to say that the integrity of something has been diminished, we say that their integrity has been compromised. And that's what happens in Washington, D.C. Deals are made. A representative of the coal industry, not a representative of a district that has coal in it. Look, come on, we're talking reality here. A representative of the coal industry goes to somebody who might be opposed to mountain removal and says, "Hey, I thought you wanted that national park out there in your state."
"Well, yeah, I did."
"Well, then why are you opposing? Why are you opposing mountain removal?" "Because I'm going to bust your ass, and I'll never get on board with your little bill for your little national park unless you make sure that 42 out of 48 communities in Appalachia get shit on." That's how it works. Hey, Mr. Coal Country Congressman, will you sign on for health care?" "Yeah, but you better shut the hell up about coal mining, by God, or I won't."
"Okay, we'll be quiet."
That's politics, baby. And in Appalachia, we're meat on the hook. We're a bargaining chip. We're inconvenient. And that's the truth. That's our world. And among liberals and progressives, that is damn sure our problem. You see, liberals and progressives haven't understood that when we're compromising, we're losing. I got to give the right wing that. They didn't compromise diddly when they had control of the Congress. They rammed it through and said, "Eat it and smile." And we ate it, and we smiled. They didn't mess with the niceties of what they advanced the whole agenda. The right-wing fundamentalist freaks got their agenda. We're still trying to root out all the weirdos from Patrick Henry School and the Jerry Falwell U and Pat Robertson U that slithered their way into the government, and we will be for a generation. Religious right got what they wanted. Big pharmaceutical industry got what they wanted. Insurance companies got what they wanted. Oil companies got what they wanted. Coal companies got what they wanted. They all got what they wanted because they stood together and said, "No, some is not enough. We want it all." But us, we haven't figured that out yet. We want to make deals. We want to compromise. See, that's one of the beauties. That's one of the things that I so respect about our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch. Where mountaintop removal is concerned, there is absolutely no compromise. It must end. We are unwilling to say that it's okay over there, but not okay here, because we understand that we don't have the right to sell out somebody else for our own well-being, and those offers have been made. And I'm so proud that the organization said, no, there's no compromise on mountain removal. because we don't have a vote on compromising the futures of those as yet unborn and undreamt of. In too many places in our community, however, there is compromise. And we have a president bent on compromise. And it's sad. Because I think if you gave him his way, there'd probably be some sort of government-sponsored health care for all of America. I think if he had his way, he'd be out of Iraq and Afghanistan a lot quicker than what we're going. I think there's a lot of things that if he had his way, would be taken care of. But because he wants at least a half of a loaf instead of empty mouth, they compromise. And I, and me, and mine, my neighbors, my friends, the unborn, we got compromised. We were part of a bargain. We are the not quite Americans to be named later in a heinous deal. It's sickening to me. When this news broke earlier today, I talked to somebody who said, you know what? I just went outside and I ripped the Obama sticker off of my vehicle, and you'd be surprised how easy it come off. That's the thing that's hard to understand here. Barack Obama didn't carry Kentucky. He did not carry West Virginia. He owes not a damn thing to the coal companies that worked their asses off to defeat him, and there he is, placating them. The fight is not over. The fight will not end. As long as we are around, the fight continues. Not we so much as the folks who do the real fighting. I'm just talking. But I have a feeling we've got a harder fight on our hands than we had under the Bush administration, because we knew those sons of bitches were evil. We didn't expect this. We expected at least a little something. We didn't expect this. And there's more. Oh, Lordy, there's more. You know, there's legislation out there. There's something out there called the Clean Energy and Security Act. It's supposed to be a law that will actually do something about the pending horrors of climate change. But guess what? You know how we talked about last night that, Max Baucus has taken, in the last year alone, $1 million from the healthcare industry, the health insurance industry? He's taken $1 million for him, and he's the one who shut the door on doctors who actually wanted to talk about single-payer coverage? Well, it ain't just that one. The American Clean Energy and Security Act has, in the words of The Clean, go to theclean.org. The American Clean Energy and Security Act has been compromised. There's that damnable word again. weakened and hijacked by coal and utility special interests, and our representatives have allowed it to happen. No kidding.
Congressmen Edward Markey and Henry Waxman, this is the Queen. Your recent congressional actions have been brought to our attention, and we're concerned about your leadership. You have co-sponsored the Clean Energy Security Act. This bill is quickly becoming a getaway to the coal and energy industry. It fails to stop global warming, fails to disentangle the U.S. from unstable regions of the world, and fails to create an energy economy that enables sustainable and equitable economic prosperity. We cite the following problems. 1. Your bill continues to waste taxpayer money on the highly speculative concept of carbon capture and sequestration.
That early phase process will need some incentivization if it's going to happen, and happen it must.
As The Economist notes,
CCS is not just a potential waste of money, it might also create a false sense of security about climate change while depriving potentially cheaper methods of cutting emissions of cash and attention, all for the sake of placating the coal lobby. That's The Economist. Not exactly a liberal rag.
2. You are considering the construction of new coal-fired power plants. These plants will not only pollute, but also be subsidized by the taxpayer.
We put $3 billion into the stimulus bill for carbon capture and sequestration. We have already $10 billion built into this bill for carbon capture and sequestration.
3. You are considering giving carbon allowances back to the industry. This would continue to ensure excessive profits for the coal industry and make moot the idea of capping carbon. However, if you auction 100% of these allowances, you would ensure that these funds benefit taxpayers and support clean energy development. 4. The carbon reduction levels proposed in your bill do not meet the reduction demands required by science. 5. The EPA recently declared carbon dioxide a pollutant. We are unclear why Congress would try to legislate around the EPA's right to regulate this pollutant. 6. Members of your Congressional Committee on Global Warming accepted $3,141,759 in campaign contributions from the coal industry in 2008.
Hear that number again. $3,141,759. It's fair to ask what that buys. How can it not be fair to ask what that buys? You're hearing what that buys.
Congressmen Edward Markey and Henry Waxman, your recent congressional actions have been brought to our attention, and we're concerned about your leadership. We are the Queen. We demand you produce a bill that protects the environment, stops global warming, disentangles the U.S. from unstable regions of the world, and creates an energy economy that enables sustainable and equitable economic prosperity. We believe a new energy policy is necessary, and we intend to secure it.
Good. Do you intend to secure it? What a stunning number. $3 million of buy-offs from the coal industry. And in America, it's not a crime. It's not a crime. It's just politics, baby. Compromise. There's already $3.4 billion out there for carbon capture and sequestration, and another $10 billion coming, sunshine! Hold on, honey, mama's coming! Mm-hmm. You know what $10 billion would do in Appalachia if it wasn't thrown down the carbon capture and sequestration rat hole? You realize that's enough money to pay every mountain remover in Appalachia their current salary for about 10 years or 15? Yeah, really? You realize that's enough to subsidize a green energy industry that would build factories for solar panels and wind turbines? Yeah, really. And those jobs would stay forever. Not just 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 maybe. Forever. The kind of jobs that America used to have, where fathers were replaced by their sons, and sons were replaced by their sons, and now it can be daughters. Because we're trying to get past the sexism that this country was birthed in. But instead, we're going to take 10 to... Remember how Dim Leader used to stand on the stump when he was running for president the first time? And he'd sit there with that annoying smirk on his face.
We're going to give you a tax cut because it's your money.
That $10 billion, that's your money too. That $10 billion, go a damn sight further bringing health care to people that don't have it in this country than it will being thrown down a coal company rat hole. And it is. It's a rat hole. It's all full of vermin and filth and poison and toxin. Coal carbon capture and sequestration. What a freaking joke. Only I'm not laughing. And you're not either. Because, well, here's the problem with that joke. That joke's on us. And they're going to do it. They are honest to God going to do it. And they're going to look at you, and they're going to look at me, and they're going to look at Appalachia and say, eat it and smile. Congressman Markey, Congressman Waxman, done good work. Good people. But once again, because money is allowed to do what money can do, the love of money is, after all, according to the book, the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. And that money has taken root, and in Appalachia, evil is gonna sprout like dandelions after a spring rain. And guess what? Ain't nobody getting no jobs. This is welfare. This is corporate welfare of the worst, most vile, toxic, stinking kind. If you thought you were outraged at what happened with the bankster's bailout money when they used it for plane hangers and that foolishness, wait till you see what the coal companies do with this little welfare handout. It ain't even good. Look, carbon capture and sequestration isn't even a real technology. They're going to spend $10 billion to tell us it can't be done. They're going to spend, this is a $10 billion advertising campaign that you're paying for to poison you. I'm sorry, I don't mean to holler and shout. I was going to have fun. It's Friday. I was hoping maybe our pal Kate would call in and we'd talk about hot sauce on vanilla ice cream or something. Don't reckon. Sandra's with us. Oh, guess not. All right, let's try this line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, what's up?
Very moving first hour. Did you catch yesterday? I caught it too. Congressman Joe said sequestration.
Yeah, I did, and I didn't have time to work with him on it, but he's smart enough that I think we can smarten him up.
Oh, okay, that's good. So if this is all just coal welfare and you guys are under the under the gun, so to speak, what is it that I guess that I have to ask this. What is it that we as the callers What can we do?
Well, there are practical applications.
Mm-hmm.
Simple conservation is the root of any of this, David.
Mm-hmm.
Actively seek ways to cut your usage. You know, and you get a bonus from this because your power bill goes down. There's that.
My power bill is pretty low. I'm not that.
Yeah, but you know what? If it was $10 lower, that's $10 more you got.
Yeah, I mean, I've kept it to a pretty. I'm pretty resourceful when it comes to that. Like I said, I don't have a.
There's that. If people can afford it, get off the grid. Don't participate in this boondoggle anymore at all. If you can afford it, do solar panels. If you can afford it, do consumer wind. There's that. And then there's the everyday grassroots activism that absolutely is necessary if we're to roll any of this back. And that is to tirelessly communicate with your elected representatives, your member of Congress, your senators. Get something going in your individual state. There's something brilliant happening in North Carolina that I've talked about some, but not a lot, and happening in several other states where states are passing laws saying that no mountain removal coal shall be used in their state. Advocate for that. Everyone, and really, it's simple. I talk about it. I don't know. Maybe people think I'm joking, David. Just get friendly.
Yeah.
Not get noisy or get mean. Just get friendly. And don't be afraid to talk about this stuff because it really, really matters. Talk about it at the post office. Talk about it at the grocery store. Talk about it when you're pumping your gas.
I do talk about it with my family and also people that I try to engage on the street and stuff like that. But I guess the problem is the fact that it's not something they can. I guess what I'm saying is, how do we make people feel this?
Well, you know, maybe you pick up on the theme I'm working.
Yeah.
Maybe you say because nobody else is really saying this except me.
Yeah.
That all of this equates to one amounts to one thing, and that is that Appalachian people aren't really Americans. Because it's okay to do this, and if we were real Americans, it wouldn't be okay to do this to us. Pick that theme up when you call your congressman or when you email. And you know, I reiterate the fact that I've been told time and time again by people in Washington in congressional staff meetings, by staffers in offices and stuff, man, they love to see letters coming. The ones that you actually took the time to write or type out and print and stick it in an envelope, because that's time consuming.
Right.
And if you're willing to do that, they know that you mean business and you're committed to the issue. And, you know, it's everybody knows, no big secret, you're from Maine. You are uniquely positioned because you've got those two so-called moderate senators, the Olympia Snow and Susan Collins, and they need leaned on hard. I mean, you live in a state that absolutely loves its wild outdoors and has a lot to love and be proud of. And I can't imagine that there's a Mainer up there that would stand still whether it's Don Blankenship and Massey or the thugs from Peabody or anywhere else. If they found out there was coal in Maine, would you guys just let them blow it all to hell?
You know, that's an interesting question. I guess it depends where it comes down to.
And see, that's what I was talking about earlier about the no-compromise position that Coal River Mountain Watch takes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mountaintop removal's not okay here, and we don't have a problem saying that Black Mesa in Arizona's not okay either. They're our brothers and our sisters, and we know it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and for me, you know, if they did suddenly discover coal in Maine, it wouldn't be okay to do it to Mainers either.
Yeah.
There is nobody it is okay to do that to. I mean, I hope this is some kind of an answer. But right now, this And again, you can go to TheClean, T-H-E-C-L-E-A-N, TheClean.org/Markey, M-A-R-K-E-Y, Waxman, W-A-X-M-A-N, TheClean.org/Markey Waxman, and learn all you want to learn about the fact that this this watering down, this selling out, this bastardization of a bill that was supposed to actually protect America's future is wholly unacceptable. You know, what else do? We take that number, that $3 million, David, and we, you know, they love, the people that have that money have loved getting it, but they don't love people knowing they've loved getting it. That's another thing. Make them wear it. They're telling us to eat it and smile. Well, let them wear it and smile. Let people know that these people are bought and paid for. Then maybe that money won't feel so good sliding into their pockets next time. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I was just thinking, I think where a lot of this stems from is the fact that a lot of America, when you talk about the situation with coal, is the fact that a lot of America is, I'll just come out and say it. A lot of America are wimps when it comes to rough starts with new pioneering technology and energy and the green element. They're afraid of having that moment of where...
Well, maybe that's one place where the message has failed.
Yeah.
Because you tell me, David,
yeah,
where wind energy is concerned, how in the world is it that we think that wind energy is a new technology when windmills were being built in Persia in the 7th century B.C.? How's there anything new technology about that? Maybe we've been a little, maybe the people framing the message have been a little too Star Trek-y about it. You know, in the future, we will get our energy from the sun. You know, thank you, Mr. Spock.
Maybe we need to build our own green constitution or something.
Well, maybe we need to talk about this and talk about the fact that people were, you know, it's not like in the 19th century there were artesian wells just blowing fresh water out of the earth and everybody had one.
Yeah.
Windmills were used to drive pumps that brought water to people and livestock and fields.
I think the problem is the disinformation that's going on. And see, this goes to the bit larger issue. And I know Albert and other people who have called in about the energy, especially Preston and people like that, I think the big part, the problem that we face is this gigantic disinformation campaign of where people will tell you facts about windmill technology or they'll tell you facts about solar technology and they'll turn on their loudspeaker horn or their and they'll just blast it. And then it will be another 2 or 3 years before we get any sort of little tiny traction. And I guess my problem is, I mean, I faced this with my friend who's a, I guess you could say a liberal libertarian, socially liberal libertarian. I say, well, don't you realize the fact that this technology, which you're telling me, you don't really know the facts on it. You know what you've heard from articles, and you know what you've heard from different news sources, but the research and the data isn't there. And he doesn't really have an answer because...
No, he's just got talking points that have been hand-delivered.
I know, but this is the problem that this is the problem that is also with a lot of different issues in our country. You know, this is, we also come across this with progressives. I've seen on message boards and I've had talks with people about this, and they say, well, you know, alternative energy sounds really good, but they get it framed in their mind that I just don't think we're ready yet.
And you're right. The other side has been very effective with that. I've seen it time and time again. Well, wind and solar may be part of our energy package down the road, but the technology don't exist right now. Bull.
If the technology doesn't exist right now, then what are all those wind farms that already exist doing? If the technology doesn't exist right now, how are European countries getting vast quantities of their electricity from wind and solar? If the technology doesn't exist right now, David, and I'm not yelling at you, you understand, if the technology doesn't exist right now, how is it that California, by leveraging solar, has significantly diminished its electricity consumption since the 1970s? How has that happened if the technology's not here yet, but it may be good in the future?
The
short answer, David, is that the sons of bitches are lying again.
It seems like that's all they have. But then, I guess what it comes down to is it's all they have, but it looks like it's enough. So then we're led back to the direction of okay. I guess what it comes down to is everybody listening. And myself included, we have to become more aggressive with that.
We do, and we have to be absolutely intolerant of the BS. We have to arm ourselves with the facts. You know, that's why I gave out that address to theclean.org/Marky Waxman.
Yeah.
Because there's all kinds of facts there that you can arm yourself with so that when some mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, right-wing talking point swallowing yahoo starting, well, the technology's not here. Well, you know, if you've learned these things, you can tell them that this bill gives $10 billion for carbon capture and sequestration research. It's $10 billion that don't even buy anything. For $10 billion, we can have factories creating jobs in perpetuity making stuff. You can tell people that if we pass a federal renewable electricity standard that mandates at least 25% renewables by 2025, which is eminently doable and is frankly a little bit on the wimpy side, that we will make real progress. You can tell them, frankly, that the junkie never is always willing to get clean tomorrow. But that we are living in a world where tomorrow never comes.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, you know, the fact that this is what I say to progressives as well. You know, you have people on certain blog sites and message boards who are saying the Republican Party is finished and the conservatives are finished. And, you know, it strikes me as odd because I see this meme constantly repeated over and over and over again. And then I think to myself, I'm like, how do you know if anybody's really finished? And why would you keep saying it?
It ain't over till it's over.
You don't really know because you don't really know what's in the minds of politicians and officials and bureaucrats. You don't know if that's dead. So what I'm saying is it's always best to be on your defense guard. And to say something like that, that takes you off your defense guard.
Look, there was a time when the Repiglickens were so full of themselves, David, Tom DeLay.
Yeah.
He was walking around like the cock of the walk, talking about, and I mean, he had a program, and he was making sure that people who were deemed liberals couldn't get jobs in Washington, because he was going to create a permanent Republican majority. And that disappeared like morning fog. Just burned off. But it was burned away by people who were determined to have change we can believe in and hope. And we better see some of that once in a while, you know, a little bit, just smidgen, throw somebody a bone once in a while. You know, it's that Dr. Evil thing, you know, throw me a frickin' bone here.
I'll tell you what agitates me, Bob, is the fact that we have a lot of Republicans who help each other out and do favors for favors. And then I don't know if you heard this week about the latest with this Don Siegelman drama, but it's not
yes,
good.
Yes, yes, I got it on the stack. It makes me sick. It just gags my gut.
Right, and here's the
testify, tell.
Here's my point about it. We have people, this is why I don't like when someone calls themselves a progressive. If you're a progressive, you stand by that term, and that also means You stand by the people who are hurting, and it also means that you stand by the people who are in danger. That's what it means. That's what you do. And the fact that Don Siegelman, I want people to listen to this right now, the fact that Don Siegelman and his family are going bankrupt, and there are no Democrats on D.C. willing to pitch any amount of money, and he's just struggling right now to stay afloat, and the fact that he has to go back to the same damn courthouse, the same damn judge, and has to do it all over again to face 20 years, and we don't have anyone, Bob, no one in the Obama administration, no one in the progressive movement, I don't even see it on Daily Coast, for God's sake. No one. No one's saying anything. And
well,
we have
well here, let's add to it. One,
yeah.
The people prosecuting him are still the same damn loyal Bushies. They weren't dumped. They haven't been replaced.
You know what he said? Siegelman said something on Hartman that I think you'll be interested in. He said the rumor going around town, the reason why those Bush appointees hasn't come, the why they haven't been fired, let go, you know what he said? He said Sessions has been making some calls. And he said, I'll tell you what, you move those appointees, and there's going to be trouble on the Hill. I can guarantee that. And that's what scares Mr. Obama. That's why those people are going nowhere.
Well, yeah, Jeffrey Beauregard, Sessions the Third. You know, we haven't gotten the word out on we ain't got out the word on the Third yet. You know, there's far too few Americans who understand that this guy said that he used to think the Klan was pretty cool till he found out they smoked the dope. That needs to be around. That needs to get out. Okay. Siegelman case is concerned, David. It's astonishing to me. The Bushy prosecutors went in and asked for him to serve more time than he was sentenced to.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
I know. And I'll tell you something else that really annoys the crap out of me, is the fact that the people don't realize when someone asks for help, regardless if you don't have on the same political philosophy, if someone asks for help and they're on your team and they've done something in the past, you don't just leave them drifting in the wood, in the wind. What the hell happened, man? What the hell happened? Everyone. When I say everyone, look across the spectrum. Don't you think that Huffington Post should have this on the front page, for God's sake?
Yeah, I do. I do. But then again, if somebody made me editor of the internet, it would the liberal internet would look a lot different. Again, it comes back to this compromise business. There are people who are happy with things the way they are.
I understand that, but the fact that
and you know, if we think for an instant, David, that there aren't liberal gatekeepers the way there are right wing gatekeepers, we are engaging in some very foolhardy and dangerous self delusion.
Oh, I understand. I understand completely. But you know, I think here's the problem. I mean, I think there are some good, honest progressives left, and they're not, I hate to say it, Bob, they're not carrying the weight when they have that media platform. And when it comes to something like, it's his freaking life, for God's sake. It's his freaking life. His family is going bankrupt. There's no kidding about that. His family is going bankrupt from this stupid lawsuit. And the fact that the Democrats can't open a chest, I don't know, Dean, open something. Dean, do something. I know Harry Reid's not going to do something, but you can't. Oh, here's the thing.
Wait. You know, because, look, you know, you mentioned the fact that, you know, the word on the street is that Jeff Sessions has said that he'll cause problems.
Yeah.
How many problems can Jeff Sessions cause? That stupid mush-mouth son of a bitch has already come out and said that he's going to make trouble at every turn. How much more can he make? You know, I wish maybe a couple of our redneck buddies would call in and help me explain this. But there's only one way you deal with a redneck bully. You call him. You call him on it. You say, if you're going to make trouble, you make trouble, and if you bring a knife, I'll bring a gun. If you bring a gun, I'll bring a bomb.
Exactly.
You can't make, you know, you can't eat what you can't eat what you kill, and you can't kill what you didn't make. You gotta look at a Jeff Sessions and say, you dirty little mush-mouth, jug-eared son of a bitch, you bring it, and I'm gonna put my fist right through your nose till I'm tickling the back of your skull.
That's
how you deal with a redneck bully.
I agree completely, but you see that the problem is...
But Harry Reid ain't got that in him. You know, it just drives me nuts, because anytime you learn about Harry Reid, you find out, oh, Harry Reid was a Golden Glove boxer. What was his name? Tomato Can Joe? He was a boxer? He was a champion boxer? And he won't stand up and fight for his own?
You just gave me the image of, there's the first guy in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out named Glass Joe. And all you have
yes!
To punch him
is... that, oh, I remember, Glass Joe! And yeah, you look at him and he falls down.
I think it comes... It has to be, we have to deal with this, is the fact that we have to come to terms with this, that Harry Reid, he doesn't have it in him, give us what we want, and he needs to go. I'm sorry, I mean, we gave him so many years already.
You know what you got to do, you know, and I know this is dirty pool.
Yeah.
But what you got to do, and Obama can't, and nobody in the Senate can, but, you know, this is the kind of thing that you really cherish a Larry Flint for. Because they got the deep pockets to do it. You hire a really good private investigator.
Mm.
And that guy just quietly follows Senator Sessions everywhere he goes until he catches him in the hotel room with the little boy. You know, the reason it's an old political truism or an old stereotype or a chestnut or whatever you want to call it, the only thing that could harm him with his voters is a dead girl or a live boy. Well, follow him long enough and you'll find it one or the other of them, because those holier-than-thou mush-mouth bastards are always into something.
Take advantage of the NSA wiretaps, too.
Now, we wouldn't want to be behaving like the Bushies now, would we?
Yeah, well... I really have to say, though, that the thing with Siegelman is the fact that I find it astounding, the fact that nobody has thought to, hey, maybe we should pass the hat around and help this guy, because his legal battles are really closing in on him. And it's like no one is doing...
email rolling in real quick, David, from... from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest in the shadow of Mount St. Helens.
Yeah.
And she says, please tell David that Dean no longer is running the party. They canned him and gave it to some inexperienced weasel. And, yeah, they did. But Dr. Dean is still in the fight. You know, he's part of a passionate process to get single-payer health care for America. Stand with Dr. Dean. You can learn about it at democracyforamerica.com. By the way, I guess this is as good a time as any to make the announcement. Gosh, you know, they're probably going to think, oh, wow, he's an asshole. I got great news from the DFA and Netroots Nation today. We got the scholarship. We got it, David.
Congratulations on that one.
I need them to understand, you know, I don't just sit here and complain to be complaining.
Right.
You know, we have got, there is stuff in America, and I know, Barack Obama's only been in office for a little over 100 days. I know. And I know what an uphill climb with one foot in a bucket he's got. But you know what? Somebody has got to be out there. It's that whole principle of the Overton window, and anybody who wants to is free to go and read about it. Just look up Overton window. I promise you, it's not a sash and awning company.
Right.
Somebody's got to be out there talking about the things that have to happen and talking about no compromise positions. And the horn and you and me and John and Guy and Mark and Peter in the background that we hope will be back someday soon, and the guys on the weekend, Rick. And Billy, we've got to be talking about these things. We've got to be talking about the real answers, the answers that are not subject to compromise. See, this is the thing that just blows me away. How did the Repiglicans get away with a no-compromise position for so many years?
Oh, I'll tell you why.
And we can't do it.
Oh, I'll tell you why. We have so many people sitting on the bleachers right now who don't do the work, who don't engage, who don't put the thought in, who don't put in the research, who don't put in the energy. And there needs to be some knuckling down and saying, hey, you're part of this, you say you're part of this progressive movement, it's time to get off your ass and help us. That's what, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, we're at the point of where it's not even about the work. It's like, can you open your mouth and say just one word or something? That's where we're really at. I mean, when you listen to, this is the other thing I hate, Bob, when people say, I'm just a radio host. I'm just a radio host.
Well, if you want to say anything about the horn, I know where I'm concerned. You'll never hear me say that. You'll hear me say I don't have the answers.
Right.
Because I am not the Shell Answer Man. Okay.
Right.
But while I don't have the answers, I damn sure will walk the walk, and I will talk the talk. Because I can't talk the talk without walking the walk. Ain't nobody. I ain't getting no $40 million a year. I don't have a Gulfstream jet. Okay. I don't have the luxury of just slithering in behind the microphone like some right winger, and trying to make trouble. What comes from the horn comes from the heart.
Yeah.
There's a new slogan.
There you go. And it could be a visual graphic as well. I think that what's really important is the fact that we continue to drive these issues together. And hopefully with this Netroots Nation, you can get more people aware of the situations that you're facing and the situations that we are concerned about as a whole, and get people more energized and more motivated. And hopefully... more investors interested and curious in keeping something that could be around for decades if they just take a little bit of interest and just a little bit of time.
Absolutely. There's so much more that we can do. You know, this reinvention that we're going through, where we don't just do the radio thing, but we also try to go out and help people get their message out. When I got the phone call from Netroots Nation, I explained to them what I hope to do there. You know, bring Netroots Nation to the whole bloomin' world for as many as want to hear what's going on. You know, it's like the Bible says, for those that have ears, let them hear. You know, we're gonna provide those ears if anybody wants to hear the future, the real future of a hopeful America. It's going to be at Netroots Nation, and we're going to provide that information. We're going to provide that access. And I hope we can do that in other places, too. I hope we can expand into video. But you know what? I joke about making bricks without straw, but you know what? I can't. And I'll tell you right now, David, we're going to be hanging on by a hangnail till August to get to Netroots Nation. It is getting grim, brother. Grim.
Well, you know, Bob, that's another reason why I called, about the fact that we need to get more engaged. And just like when I was in the Scouts, you know, when we needed something, we got it. And you know how we got it? We got it through fund drives, and we figured out ways to do it. And I think it's about time that everyone calling and involved, if you have some free time, if you're interested in this, let's get together our ideas and put together some kind of fund drives that will help sustain this. Because I don't think it's impossible, and I've seen worse off situations for a lot of networks and companies. So I think with our mind power and our energy, we can come up with something.
We can, and it's gonna, like I said, it's gonna be brutally difficult all summer long. I hate that the tough stuff's gonna hit in the summer, but it just is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gonna take every penny, just to keep this on the air.
Wow.
Look, I've been talking about going to D.C. America's Future Now conference coming up June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd to be there with Guy James.
Right.
I don't know if Guy's listening right now or not, but that's in question. That is in question. It will take every. I mean, literally, if I have to go down to, if I have to drive down the mountain to Charleston and sell plasma out of my body, we'll be in Pittsburgh in August. But it is that grim. Every, you know, there's not. I was talking about. We need new equipment. We need new stuff to use in Pittsburgh. There ain't gonna be no new equipment. There ain't going to be no new stuff. It's going to take every penny just to make the horn stay alive.
You know, that's the other thing I was wondering about, the equipment. It wears down fairly.
Oh, look, I need to do a rebuild on the main machine here.
Right.
I need a new processor. I need... We need a new video card, but that ain't gonna happen. I was talking. I don't know if you've ever seen those little LAN boxes, because I'm sick to death of fooling with Vista. The little portable LAN boxes that are, it's a full computer, but it's fairly portable. I was gonna try to build two or three of those. We've got a couple, you know, because we do have some redundancy here in case everything just goes to caca.
Right.
But I was going to try to build a couple of those to take with us. That ain't going to happen. That is not going to happen. Every penny that we have is going to go into staying alive. And I hate to beat on this, and I didn't mean to turn your phone call into this, David, but you brought the topic up. It's not a joke. Nobody here is getting paid. I get these emails from people like ELO in the chat room, who says, "Well, you know, I went off on a tear, and I spent overnight building a video."
Yeah,
that's what people do. You know, I can't tell you the hours that John Fox has in the rebuild of HeadOnRadioNetwork.com 2.0, if you will. He ain't getting paid. I'm not getting paid. Nobody's getting paid. And this is not me saying, oh, I want to get paid. I want to get paid. I want every. You know what? I want everybody else to get paid before I get paid. But we're talking, and this is, you know, more or less six of one, half dozen of another. We're talking about just staying alive. Just staying alive.
Let me ask you a question. If all the people listening right now on their streams, if they just deducted a dollar, say a dollar, would that be able to keep you alive for the next month?
I'm sorry, I was communicating with Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg. Say again, please,
okay.
David.
I was saying, if all of the people who are listening to on the stream all around the world, if they were just to contribute $1, would that keep you alive from month to month?
If everybody sent a buck, no.
Wow.
No.
Well, you know, this goes exactly what I was talking about, Bob. You know, when, like I said, when I was in the Scouts, when we were at school, we needed something, especially at home. Wherever.
You know what? Here, let me tick off a few things. I need a lawyer. I need a lawyer who's well versed in nonprofit stuff. We need to change our status. I need that lawyer. Okay. I need people who want to blog at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And I'm speaking ex cathedra here, I guess, but I think John and Lottie and Sue would concur with me. We need people blogging exclusively at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and creating scintillating stuff that'll get out to the web and drive traffic to the website. Okay? We need people running Twitter. We need people running Facebook. And we've got some help with that, but we got to ramp it up. And the problem with all of this is again, nobody's getting paid to do it, and everybody has to maintain a so-called real life outside of this.
Yeah, that is definitely a problem area. You can mark me down for the blog.
Well, I know you've been going crazy on the forums, and that's beautiful stuff. And I don't want to take away from that because you're putting content up there that's worth seeing.
Well, not so much the following weeks. I've been trying to build up my my business right now. I'd like to, like I said, I'd like to do some auctions for some charity when I get some quality stuff when I go to an auction, and hopefully we can pass that money your way.
Bless your heart. Because right now, and I'm not kidding. You know, we are surviving on the contributions of less than 30 people a month.
You know, this
and I understand, David. I understand because people are crushed right now. People are hammered in this economy right now. And I guess from time to time, I'll piss somebody off over some issue, and they'll go, goodbye.
You know, let me tell you a story about that. About, you know, a lot of, this is my problem with a lot of wealthy people, and that includes progressives and not just, but this is a story of a wealthy Republican friend my dad knows. He actually spends $50,000 on his private plane to fly out here. At a whim's notice, anytime he wants. And my parents have addressed him and said, "You don't find anything wrong with that. You don't even flinch at it." And he's like, "Nope." Drunk, kind of just drunk off his ass, and just sitting there in his plane. And it's a quoting. That's a funny thing. My family are friends with this guy, and they try to set him straight. Like, no, you're talking about. What you're talking about is what a Republican did. That's not a Democrat. That's what a Republican did. And see, that's the problem. There's so many people to keep track with, and it's such on an emotional base what you're tied to. And it's like that Nancy Pelosi thing. I know how everyone's going crazy over Nancy Pelosi, but you know it, and I know it.
Well, look, I'm frustrated with her. But yeah. I'm, you know, probably my response to it, to be entirely honest, is born out of a lot of other frustration with her. You know, the whole impeachment is off the table thing, you know, is still stuck in my craw like a chicken bone. OK, you know, to be fair, let's at least keep the focus where the focus belongs. Nancy Pelosi did not initiate this problem. Nancy Pelosi did not initiate the torture issue. Nancy Pelosi, at worst, was vaguely complicit, okay?
Right.
And if she was lied to by the CIA and she didn't have the starch to look up and go, well, you know, it's the CIA, they're probably lying to me. Well, I guess things happen to your brain in Washington, D.C., and you assume that the CIA tells the truth because we're supposed to be on the same side. But the CIA is on the CIA's side.
Right.
There's nothing American about the CIA, okay? There's CIA about the CIA. That's why they've got their own flag.
They don't call Cheney the angler for nothing, you know.
Yeah. Hey, David, I got to roll along. You've stacked a bunch of people up here. You have a way of doing that, brother.
Okay, later.
Good to talk to you. Later. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye now. And let's see. Let's see what we got going on here. I think this is Susan. Is that you, Susan? Hey, Susan.
Yep. I happen to be one of those people, one of those 30-some people.
You are indeed.
Yep. Oh, by the way.
Actually, it's less than 30.
Okay. I tossed in some money toward Coal River.
Bless your heart. Bless your heart. Because, you know, they're tickled to pieces to help support this, but they are... they've been hit hard because of the financial disaster. And let me just take a minute to encourage people. Go crmw.net. There's a link called down the left-hand side says support. There's a PayPal button there. Oh, use it. You know, I'm sitting here talking about it's going to be tough for us. It's even tougher for them. I'm not going to go into details.
Yeah.
It's even tougher for them.
Yeah. Now, what I wanted to mention was, first of all, guys, if you're sitting there and you've got say, 30,000 a year coming in? Why aren't you donating? Unless you're making less, pulling in less than we are at my house, which is $14,000 a year, and my mortgage is half of that. Guys, you have no excuse. Cough up. Because if I can manage to find a buck or two, you can. It's that simple.
Well, I will leave that to you, Susan, because everyone has to answer their own questions out of their own budget every month.
I understand that.
And I'm not calling you down, but
I understand. But you know, I've been in that position where you're pulling in a good living, and you think, God, you know, I just can't free up any money, and then you happen to sit down and look, and you start thinking, where is this money going? And you realize,
you want to know where I am right now, Susan? I'm not kidding.
You suddenly realize you're frittering it away.
Yeah. I say this halfway jokingly, but every bit as much halfway seriously. You know what I'm doing these days? I'm practicing my best. Welcome to Walmart.
I love you.
Love you.
I mean, I wish that wasn't true, but that's the only job for miles and miles around that doesn't involve it does involve destroying my community. But, yeah, really. Welcome to Walmart.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah. Now, believe it or not, that's not actually the reason I called in. The reason I called in was, besides writing, and I urge everyone to actually sit down and write the president about this EPA decision. He should perhaps be reminded that actions have consequences.
Well, I understand about the consequences, but that's what's kind of making my brain hurt, Susan. Does he think that by licking the boots of the coal company, he's going to carry West Virginia's pissant electoral votes in 2012?
Well, no, what I was thinking of is keep up what you're doing, Obama, and this is going to have consequences to the tune of I am really close to going down and changing my party affiliation.
Independent?
Yep. I am that close, just inches away.
Because I know that frustration. I know that frustration. I know it's out there. You know, we've got a little thing called the Mountain Party here in West Virginia. And I have been so close sometimes I can taste it to just go on and register in Mountain Party.
Yeah.
Because at least there's no equivocation. You know, they've never had anybody elected so much as dog catcher. But there's no equivocation on their position about mountain removal. There's no equivocation on their position about the future of West Virginia.
Yeah.
And about the future of this nation.
Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if the treating the people of Appalachia like they're, well, like they've just been brought in off the boat from Africa and are ready to be auctioned off at the block, to put it bluntly. The way Siegelman is being treated, the military commission's thing, the way the torture thing is going.
I was listening, as is my wont, and maybe it's unfair for I was listening to Malloy last night, and you know there is not a liberal talker in America who does not owe a debt of gratitude to Mike Malloy. Because Malloy was doing it when it didn't exist. Okay?
Yeah.
And I was listening to him talking about, you know, not giving up on Obama. Because he's dealing with a lot of folks, apparently, to hear him call in their emails and so forth, that are just frustrated as all hell with our president. And Mike, as is his wont, was trying to inject a little bit of sanity into the process and saying, you know, no, I'm not. I think what he said was, I'm not ready to give up on America because I'm not ready to pack my bags. I'm not ready to give up on Obama because I'm not ready to pack my bags and get out of here.
Yeah.
And I respect that position. I really, really do. And I don't take issue with it. And I think it is. I think it is a much needed voice of sanity. As he has been for so very, very long. And there's no but. There's no but to this. It's just that when the sellout is right on top of your ass, as it is for me and mine here in Appalachia, that's awful hard to do. And I understand that person who said, I went out and peeled off my Obama sticker, and it came off real easy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, well, to me, it's real personal when they start, you know, okay, when I went to work for the Obama campaign, the paid staffer put up this great big piece of paper, and she basically urged everybody, whoever came in there, or who worked there, to take a Sharpie and put down what they wanted to come from the Obama campaign. And I was one of the very first people to write on that. And I said, I had one sentence. I want my Constitution back. Now, when I hear people like Jonathan Turley compare Barack Obama to George Bush, ew.
Yeah, I know, ew. And, well, here, let me give you a quick update, Susan.
Yeah.
The EPA has responded to my congressman's statement today saying all is well with, you know, his essentially says, you know, all is well with mountain removal. The press secretary for EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson, Adora Andy, issued the following. EPA continues to conduct, and this, by the way, you can go and read about this at the Coal Tattoo blog. Ken Ward does more, and Jeff Biggers said it very well. He's the go-to guy for information on this topic. He has carved himself out a niche, and he occupies every square inch of that niche, and he does it very, very well. Coal Tattoo blog is at wvgazette.com. Down the left-hand side, you'll see a link, a picture, you know, graphic. Click it. It's worth the read. If you're interested in this issue, it's the be-all and end-all. But this is the statement. EPA continues to conduct a detailed and rigorous review of all pending Clean Water Act permits for mines in the Appalachian coal fields. We have concluded under the law that 6 projects of an initial 48 permits EPA reviewed will not proceed unless adverse environmental impacts are further reduced. That's 6 out of 48. We will continue to follow the law and use the best science as we quickly and thoroughly evaluate over 150 pending applications to reduce harmful environmental. No. The way you reduce them is by eliminating the process, period.
Exactly.
You can't reduce. You can only eliminate. There is no such thing as reduction. Incrementalism, where mountain removal is concerned, is still mountain removal.
Tell that to the people.
But it goes on, Susan. EPA decided not to provide additional comments on the remaining 42 permits after consideration of the nature and extent of project impacts. 28 of the projects have 2 or fewer valley fills.
Yeah.
11 have no valley fills at all. None have more than 6. Oh, gosh, there's no more than 6 valleys that are going to be buried forever. EPA's understanding is that none of the projects would permanently impact high-value streams that flow year-round.
Oh, Jesus bloody Christ.
You know, you live in Oregon, Susan.
Yes.
And you live in one of them temperate rainforests just like I do.
Yep, I grew up with the sound of rushing water.
But didn't rush all the time now, did it? Rushed some of the time. Rushed when the rains came.
Yep.
Where's the water go when the water that rushes down them hollers when the rains come? Where's that water go when there ain't nowhere for it to rush to? Is it just me, or I remember an old truism that says, water always seeks its own level.
Own level. Yep.
So, streams that flow year-round.
Yep.
You know, there's a place... place in Arizona, I think it's called Quartzsite, Arizona. And it hardly ever rains there, but it rains there once in a while, and when it does...
Oh, boy, Katie bar the door.
Katie bar the door, and what happens after that rain is amazing. The desert blooms.
Yes.
And little tiny brine shrimp eggs that have lain dormant for literally years hatch.
Yep.
And lay more eggs for the next time it rains. Now, I know, the right-wingers and the conservatives and so forth. And, well, look at him. He's worried more about brine shrimp than he is about human beings. No, because when the brine shrimp can't live, neither can the humans. I know that's a little bit crazy, but it's true.
Yes.
So that streams that flow year-round just makes me a little bit crazy. By contrast, EPA has opposed 6 permits because they all would result in significant adverse impacts to high-value streams, involve large numbers of valley fills, and impact watersheds with extensive previous mining impacts. Pardon me, I know I say let's avoid the fun words. Mom, Dad, get little Timmy and little Cindy out of the room. Bullshit. And I say that because I didn't give enough time, did I? The fact of the matter is, every time the blasting happens, I don't care if there's a valley fill or not, significant adverse environmental impacts take place. For instance, up here, guess what? There was a rumor going around, Susan. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hijack your call. There was a rumor going around that the mountain removal site up on top of Gauley Mountain near here where I live, that the coal market was so bad they's pulling their equipment and just going away and starting reclamation work. Well, a little bit after 4 p.m. for the last several days, the boom booms have happened. And I have learned to tell the difference between thunder and boom boom.
Yeah.
And see, there's no valley fills up there. They have moats. I'm not kidding. Moats.
Moats?
Moats.
So you get to be behind a sludge dam, too.
Well, no, not really. Because this is just a little baby mountaintop removal operation. That's why I don't feel like I've got all the cred that my friends in the Coal River Valley have. Because they deal with the real deal. This is just a little baby operation that hasn't spread like the cancer that these damn things are yet. And they've got moats. But it's still sitting there as poisonous as the day is long.
Yep. By elections having, actions having consequences, I also mean that the next time a dam goes, and it will go, as sure as the sun rises in the morning. You know that as well as I do. Sooner or later, a dam will go. The people to be blamed won't be Bush. It will be Obama. Obama now owns this issue.
Yeah, he kind of bought it, didn't he?
Yeah, he bought it, he paid for it, and he gets to eat it. Because sooner or later, one of those dams, be it Marsh Fork or one of the other of the hundreds and hundreds of them that are sitting there like ticking time bombs. They're going to cut loose, and somebody's going to die. And I hope to God it's not a kid, but sooner or later, someone will die. It's sure as the sun rises.
Susan, nothing but rain fell in Mingo County, West Virginia recently. Nothing but rain.
Oh, God.
And the water ran raging through Gilbert and other places.
Yep. And it's...
That was nothing but water.
Yeah.
But if one of these if one of these dams goes, not if, when,
yeah,
a wall of water some, don't hold me to it, but I think somebody said 70 feet high?
Yeah.
Is going to go down the Coal River Valley, and it'll still be 30 feet high when it, and if you go and you Google and you look at where Marsh Fork Elementary is and you follow Route 3 all the way down to Sylvester, it'll be 70 feet. It'll still be 30 feet high at Sylvester, or maybe 15. But I don't know any 15-foot-tall humans.
Yeah. Not a man, woman, or a child will be left alive except for by pure, dumb luck.
And the mountains there run straight up and down.
Yep.
You can't get to safety.
Nope.
And so it is particularly sickening. It's sickening when I see phrases like... EPA, none have more than 6 valley fills.
Uh-huh.
EPA's understanding is that none of the projects would permanently impact high-value streams that flow year-round.
See, where I live, it rains, and it's a soothing sound that pleases me. Where you live, it's a sound.
It's a terrifying sound. Now... It used to be that rain was as soothing to us as it is to you. Just an honest-to-God question. What would Oregonians do, even those weirdos in eastern Oregon, what would Oregonians do if they started blowing up the mountains there and telling you that it was necessary for our national energy security? What would Oregonians do, Susan?
We have the, I don't know about you, but we, the petitioners would be out within a very, very short amount of time, and it would be very shortly against state law.
You know, David was asking me earlier, what can we do? You know, you guys don't deal with it directly. There's no coal-fired power plants out there that are burning mountain removal coal. If you're burning any coal at all.
No?
Okay.
I am fortunate that where we are, my power company does not use it. The little town about 15 miles from here does.
Mountain removal coal in Oregon?
Mountain removal coal.
You mean we're training this stuff across? Well, we send it to China. Why would I be surprised?
Yeah. I called up and jumped all over them.
Because I figured it'd all be Powder River Basin coal if it was anything. You mean you went to ilovemountains.org and you put your zip code into the little...
You bet.
Bless my soul.
And everybody I meet up here, wherever they live, I say,
you know how much I hate to give marching orders, but you've never been one to shy away from a ruckus, Susan.
No.
If that's happening in Oregon, you guys need a law just like they're considering in North Carolina and several other states. No mountain removal coal shall be burned in this state, period.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, and Oregon does have the initiative process. That's how we got the Death with Dignity law passed.
Well, that sounds like something you might be able to sink your teeth into, Susan. I love it when you laugh like that. That's real scary and stuff. For somebody else. It kind of gives me a little thrill of hope.
Well, let me see. Gene's over in Hillsboro, so I could probably give him a call.
Oh, and we got other folks in. Hey, Oregonian listeners. Either now or podcasted later or on the rerun stream. Shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And we'll see if you guys want to raise a ruckus. You guys want to start something? Let's make sure no mountaintop removal coal is burned in Oregon. What do you say? Because I'm just stunned that that stuff would be burned out there. How much does it cost to get it there, for God's sakes?
John, I haven't the vaguest. I was floored when I found out that Scappoose had it. It was the town of Scappoose, Oregon that had it. Let me see if they still have it. I'm going to go to my check their zip code. Well, I'm going to check St. Helens first. Oh, this is bad. St. Helens is too.
No kidding.
Kirk, West Virginia.
I'll be diddly.
They get their power from Portland General Electric, which means the city of Portland.
I'll be damned.
We have a talk with these people. Oh, I'm gonna have fun.
Well, Susan, I hope you do. This has been a wonderful conversation. I got to roll on though.
Okie doke.
All right, talk to you soon.
Okay, everybody.
Bye. Bye. I was going to play music and everything tonight, but I think we're going to have conversation instead. Hey, welcome to the program.
So, this is how we're, once again, another Front Porch Friday goes down in flames.
Yeah, Reverbo, it kind of does.
That's how it's going to be, huh?
I didn't mean for it.
You know, maybe I should be the one to tell you, because you all don't seem to get this. You have taken on the coal industry. I have four words for you. Are y'all insane?
Well, at least in the three words that you are effed. I mean, you know.
it's y'all that was the two words. Insane.
Oh, I thought insane was the two words.
No. That's, I don't know. What is lower than a possum? Because that's what you guys are in West Virginia. You're not a chip in the poker game. Man, you don't even count.
We ain't the felt on the table.
Is Mississippi worse than you, or do you have...
No, we got the statistics on our side. There are things in which we can get up in the morning and giggle about Arkansas and Mississippi.
What did you think? What did y'all think? God, here I am talking like these people. I got to get out of here. What did you
these people? Oh, I get to run you up the pole for that one. These people. We need to enroll you. We need to enroll you in Sister Kate's the Dixie for Dummies class. Have you had your vanilla ice cream with your crystal hot sauce on it yet?
I have not tried that. I'm worried about that, and I love spicy food, but I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take it a step further though, because I know that the ancient Mexica loved a little cayenne pepper in their chocolate beverage. So I'm going to take me some Breyers chocolate ice cream, and I'm going to dash it a little bit. I'm going to bet you it's good.
Actually, while I was on hold, I did two things, interesting things. One, I do have dried mango with chili, spiked with chili powder on it that I've been eating. So, I mean, I'm close. And the other thing I did, and I don't know why I did this, but my checkbook is going to take an extra 10 seconds to balance next month. I sent you $20.
I saw that, brother. I saw that.
Now, you know, here's the deal. This man that we are now bashing, he showed what was possible with people sending $10 here and $20 there, didn't he?
He did that.
He did that, and that's how it worked. It was not with $5 million here and $10 million there. But I think, and David sort of touched on this too a little bit, the problem is that people are just kind of burned out. And it seems like the last guy you would need to remind what he's doing there is Obama. He knows why he got elected. He knows why he's there.
He does, and that's why. And you know what? Let me do something here in the midst of all this begging and pleading and everything that I'm doing for the continued existence of the horn. I would highly recommend that people do what is necessary to go back and get Malloy's podcast from last night and hear that little dose of realism that Mike brought to the discussion. It's fairly late in the program. We struggle to survive, but you know what? There's no point to us being here if Malloy's not there. Because, again, he is the dean of all of this. There ain't no Randy Rhodes. There ain't no Stephanie Miller. There ain't no Ed Schultz. There ain't no Tom Hartman. There ain't nobody if Mike Malloy is not behind a microphone on a lark starting out like in 1986 in Atlanta, Georgia.
Man, I've heard him now and then. I haven't kept up with him. But
He's worth your time, brother. He is worth your time.
I will have to go.
And so, you know, people should hear that, what he was talking about last night.
For those of us who didn't hear him, can you summarize?
Well, no, he was just being politically realistic and asking, you know, whether or not we believe that Barack Obama is just cynically Washington politically driven and he's going to do his own thing and he just used us all to get into office and achieve political power. I'm paraphrasing broadly here. Or is he trying to deal with the realities on the ground? And is he trying to deal with the political realities that exist in Washington, D.C. and exist far outside the expectations and the optimism of those of us who sent him there?
Right.
And at the end of it, Mike said, you know, I'm not going to give up on this man, because the day I give up on this man, I got to pack my bags and leave.
Well, that's pretty much it. I don't know if it can get much. You're going to get much better than this, and this is far from perfect. I mean, I always thought, look, I'm sorry about what's happening in West Virginia. That's all I could think of when you earlier tonight. I just thought, I am sorry about this, but.
But you're in North Carolina, right?
North Carolina evidently had the right idea.
Get behind the people who are behind the right idea.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking here that what we need are new captains of industry. We need $10 here, $10 there. Ain't going to do it. We need some serious, serious money from progressive sources.
No, look, I see.
But I was wrong, but I'm wrong. But then I thought Obama did it with $10 here, with just $10.
Yeah, but wait, please wait just a minute, Reverbo.
All right.
And I'm not naysaying that. That's got to be a component of it. But I was born and raised in a place, and I think you and I have discussed this in the past. I was born and raised in a place that had a yellow fever problem because of annual flooding and recession of the Tennessee River, and it left stagnant waters, and the mosquitoes went nuts, and problem. And their little towns had grown up, but they really couldn't do anything. And then along came this notion that government could do good and do right by the people and do things that helped people and made places grow where the growth could be, dare I say it, sustainable. And in that was born the Tennessee Valley Authority. Now, never mind the fact that the Tennessee Valley Authority has morphed into a damn monster because some right-wingers and conservatives and the like got hold of it and tried to turn it into a profit engine. Poverty was the order of the day in Northwest Alabama before the Wilson Dam was built, before the Wheeler Dam was built, before all the dams along the Tennessee River that tamed that raging monstrous what a beautiful thing it was, but it was also hell on wheels. But that was government doing the work. You know all that business about government ain't never created a job. Yeah, you know, tell that to everybody who works at the International Fertilizer Development Center at TVA, right or wrong, whether that's a. Okay? But We've got $10 billion of corporate welfare that's going to go into the pockets of the coal companies and a few select universities like Carnegie Mellon and MIT, where scientists who could better spend their time on real science are going to try to come up, they're going to spend $10 billion trying to find the energy equivalent of the philosopher's stone or the universal solvent. Okay? And $10 billion later, they're going to come back and go, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, well, we're going to pump some CO2 into the ground and hope for the damn best. And that's what $10 billion is going to buy, Reverbo. On the other hand, that $10 billion could actually subsidize and then turn take public and then turn private industries that would wildly reinvigorate the free market model, and I know I'm talking some right-wing crap right now, that would reinvigorate the free market model in the United States via wind and solar and geothermal and the hybridization of all of those things and stuff like SPEGs that John Fox is so enamored with, rightly so. But we're not going to do that. We're going to throw it. You ever had a neighbor who bought a boat?
Hey, remember where I live?
Yeah, I know. And some wise ass will eventually tell him, hey, I seen you bought a hole in the water to throw money into.
Exactly.
We just spent, we're going to spend $10 billion, Reverbo, on a hole in the ground to throw money into. And we ain't going to get it back. It is literally, it is the living definition of a money pit. I didn't know we were that rich. Because we can't, remember, we can't afford universal health care.
No.
But we can afford $10 billion for something that's not even science? That we're going to baptize with the name science, but it's really an advertising campaign? Oh, God, I'm yelling at you. I'm sorry, I don't mean to.
Look.
No, you do this to me. You know that. I apologize.
No, we have to reset this. Do you think this is like you're going to try to get people to quit harpooning whales? You think this is like people would stop smoking and drinking sooner? You have latched on to, you are the poster child for reform. You are up against the most, you are up against the Tyrannosaurus of challenges here. And did you just think Obama was just going to go, well, let's just close it down, boys? And obviously, I couldn't be being more facetious here. But what did you think? You are up against it, my friend. This isn't like, and then.
You know what? And you know what? Reverbo, I owe you a debt of thanks because I need this gut check.
I mean, what did you all think was going to happen here? But listen to this. This is what black people thought in the 60s. This is not the first or the last to Tyrannosaurus of challenges, though.
You're so right.
They happen. I mean, imagine what it takes to get an amendment to the Constitution. I mean, good Lord.
Oh, I know. And you know, Mark Levine referred a couple of days ago, Reverbo, to the fact that I guess John Kennedy had a meeting with Martin Luther King, Jr. And he said, just hold off. Just hold off. I'm going to make all of this right. You just hold off. Let me get into my second term. And then we're going to fix all of this. And Martin Luther King looked at him and said, Mr. President, I ain't got that kind of time. If it don't happen now, it ain't never going to happen.
So what do we do then? We don't go back. We can't move. We're static.
No, we're not static. There's a hell of a lot of anger out in the environmental community in West Virginia right now, and frankly, all around America. Because people, it is a significant, it is a minority, but it's a significant minority right now of people who understand that, you know, people who live here really are Americans. You know that. The whole Horn audience knows that.
Mountaineers are free.
Montani Semper Liberi, baby.
Yeah, well, how's that freedom looking?
It ain't feeling too well, you know. Right now, at this point in time, you know, it's me, you know, it's me and Bobby McGee. You know, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
When I say static, what I meant was, for every people, it's like we are trying to trust someone who we think is just throwing some bones up at. Well, no, I can't. There's no way to. There's no.
We didn't even get the damn bone.
No, you didn't get anything. There's no way to put a good face on this. You guys got hosed, and that's all there is to it. But
sticky, broken, confused. That's where we are right now.
Yeah. You, it's funny. Well, it's not funny. You kind of tied this into the torture discussion of this week when you said earlier in the evening, you know, one thing you got to do is just keep reminding people that they're all on the take, that they're all ready to be bought off, and they just got bought off this time. And I'm sitting there thinking, so what else is new? We know this. It's like, why do we want to release one more torture photo? I get it, okay? But then, once again, it's like, evidently, you haven't gotten it enough. I mean, that's, you know what I'm saying here?
Yeah, I do. Like, yeah, I do.
I mean, yeah, they're on the take, you know. Let's see if there's a game on. I mean, that's,
you know, this is going to be a weird tangential story, but I'm going to do it anyway, Reverbo, because, you know, you kind of opened these doors for me, and God, I love them. Earlier today, my lovely wife and I were having a conversation, and it turned for some odd reason to that little TV show that we hated to see canceled because we were actually watching it. It was a thing on ABC, and everybody's told me that the original BBC version was much better, and okay, I'll take you at your word for it. But we were watching the ABC version of a little program called Life on Mars. And it was good, and it was fun to watch, and it was worth, you know, it was actually TV that I looked forward to watching. And I don't do that for anybody but Tony Bourdain. You know, rank escapism. And I had said something, and she said, you know, why am I going to care about, oh, I know what it was. I was talking about, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have a TV in the bedroom? Yeah, this from the guy who said there's no reason to have more than two TVs in the house. But we've got one TV in the house, and it constantly runs either Hey Gabba Gabba or Me Like Fry Ham or whatever that children's program is. That's all it runs on the TV. And I was talking about, wouldn't it be fun to have a second TV? She said, why would I want a second TV? They took off Life on Mars. And I said, you know why they took off Life on Mars? She said, no, why? She knows when I've been away from the mic. She knows, see, I 3 hours won't hold me, Reverbo. This is a 24-hour-a-day thing around here. I want the horn to keep going, if for no other reason than the self-preservation impulse for me and my marriage. Because Agnes can't take me without 3 hours to do this. I'm unbearable. But
it's pretty intense.
So I said the reason that Life on Mars went away is because it actually, even if it's not as good as the BBC series, it actually called on people to think, and a TV viewing audience that has been for the last God knows how many years, people have come to adulthood thinking that the Survivor is television.
Yeah.
Okay. I said, you know, please understand, the Twilight Zone would have been canceled after 6 weeks if it were to premiere now. I said, that particular show, Life on Mars, called on the American people to do entirely too much thinking. You know, like following plot thinking. Like paying attention to stuff thinking. And we can't do that anymore. The American people are, by and large, incapable of doing that anymore. We think that caring about a TV show involves more people voting for American Idol than vote for the president. We think that Dancing with the Stars is high damn drama. And so, you know, in noticing that, that's also the, I also can't walk away without realizing that that's the learning curve that you and I have to traverse if we're going to understand the fight that we're in. And it's not just the fight over mountain removal. It's the fight over health care. It's the fight over marriage equity. We've got to get these issues past people who can't think past the next week of Dancing with the Stars, okay? That's pretty damn grim.
It is pretty grim. And they've just about got that rig just the way they want it, then, don't they? They just about got it right just the way, except then when I've got an exception for you. The last election, we just about obliterated them. But of course, that brings up another exception. Not really. We changed the guy living in the White House, but these people that pull the strings and cancel life on Mars and encourage people to be stupid, they're still around big time. They don't go, that's why they're vampires. I want my kids to take up this fight. I'm almost about.
Right, and this is one of the,
this is about it for me. I don't know if I can do another one of these. I don't know Obama isn't the one. I don't know if I have any more energy for this. Sometimes.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, but I'm a junkie. Yeah, I do. I know I do.
No, you're not a junkie. You're a patriot, brother. You're a patriot.
I've just been aware of...
You know, it was a couple of nights ago, or last night, they all run together for me, when David from Maine was talking about not giving up. And I ran that clip of John Belushi from Animal House saying, "Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?"
Yeah, it's a classic.
And one of the Delta boys looks at the other and says, "What's he talking about?" "Shut up, he's on a roll."
Mm-hmm. he storms out of that room. They all just start hollering and run after him. Oh God.
Yul Brynner in The King and I. Ten Commandments. "So let it be written. So let it be done." Let it be written. Let it be done. I ain't quitting. Coal River Mountain Watch is not going to quit. The Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition is not going to quit. Kentuckians for the Commonwealth are not going to quit. Save Our Cumberland Mountains is not going to quit. Okay? Appalachian Voices will not be silenced. The fact that we are dealt a blow by people who are patently in the wrong does not mean that we lose. It just means we win later. Because we've already won. I learned that from a member of the American Indian Movement several years ago. AIM, great organization. He said, "You've got to understand that you've won. The impediment in your way is that the other side has not yet realized it." And I have hung on to that like a junkyard dog hangs on to a daggum bone, Reverbo.
Well, you have to, because otherwise how do you, when you hear another mountain getting dynamited, you're going to, it's the only thing left for you is anarchy. You have to hang on to it.
And I'm not going to give them an excuse to come in and gun down my beloved. And by my beloved, I mean my entire community. If anybody has ever watched that great John Sayles film, Matewan, you know, the union organizers in there saying, "No, we're not going to got, they got more guns than we got, we ain't going guns." And sooner or later, the rednecks and the pissed off mountaineers and the miners say, "No, we're going to get our guns." And the organizers left sitting there going, "God, I told them not to. I told them not to. I told them not to." And if you know the history, a whole bunch of
mine thugs got gunned down at Mate One. And as a result thereof, the one lawman who was willing to stand up for him got murdered on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse. And nobody was ever convicted for the murder. That resulted in the armed march on Blair on Logan and the Battle of Blair Mountain when the federal government first tried out its newfangled theory of aerial bombardment, something that would later be referred to as the Powell Doctrine, I do believe. And they did it on the coal miners. And there was a big kerfuffle reverbo recently over the fact that the National Register of Historic Places placed Blair Mountain on its register, and then the governor of West Virginia came out and said, "You can't do that. We won't blow it up." And there was a movement, you know, there's an ongoing movement to save Blair Mountain. But let me just throw this in there about Blair Mountain. And I think I've got a right to, because, you know, I don't know that my grandfather or great-grandfather were in the march. I don't think they were. They were busy participating in the New River Coalfield Wars. But after Blair Mountain, which is held to be a sacred shrine of the United Mine Workers, the union organization movement in West Virginia was killed dead. It ended. It stopped. And only with the rise to the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the passage of the National Labor Relations Act, I believe, or some other law, in which it was made patently legal in federal law for working people to freely associate with one another and form unions, you know, like the First Amendment says.
Mm-hmm.
Only then did we have unions. All that, and so, you know, the people who were pacifists and the people who said, no, no guns, we lose when we go to the guns. We lose when we're violent. Those people were vindicated. Because when they marched on Logan, and they battled at Blair Mountain, and they took up arms, they were squashed like bugs. Blair Mountain is very much like that field in Kosovo that somebody over there gets all weepy about, where they got their asses kicked. It's like Shiloh. It's like Gettysburg. Hey, look, here's where we got our asses kicked. And you memorialize it. Dang, didn't we get our asses kicked all glorious-like?
Yeah. Should put up a plaque or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's a long tradition of it. It was said that throughout classical times there was a plaque at Thermopylae where a whole bunch of Spartans got their asses kicked that said, "Stranger passing by, or go tell the Spartans, stranger passing by, that here, obedient to their laws, we lie." That's real fancy ancient Greek for, hey, we got our asses kicked. We memorialize, and Southerners are the worst about it. We love to memorialize the places where we got our asses kicked. The places where we won, like Manassas in Northern Virginia, it's everything we can do to get them to stop putting malls on it. Shiloh? Preserved. Gettysburg? Preserved. Hey, look, everybody, this is where we kicked the South's ass. Blair Mountain?
Well, yeah.
I mean, does this make any sense?
No, well, I have an interesting psychology about that.
And so what I'm getting at is that, you know, we don't memorialize failures. We can't memorialize failures anymore.
What we do is we look at the losses, and we pack our kits, and we move on. After Blair Mountain, the organization movement disappeared. They got their asses kicked, and somebody went back into the hole, and they understood that they were no better than the bank mules that the coal company owned. We can't do that. We recognize that we've had our ass kicked, and we find a way to fight the next day.
So you pick yourself up and you dust yourself off and you go back up on that horse.
Yep.
But is it, you have no choice.
No. And I say all this because you asked the question, you know, what now? This is, you know, it's a static situation. It's anything but static, and it's in our power.
Yeah, you just got to keep.
But that's a hard thing to recognize when you're sitting there getting punched by the people who say that they represent you.
It's really hard when you talked about he's got 1 foot in a bucket. Man, these guys got 2 feet in a bucket. It's really hard when they've left things in such disarray everywhere you look.
And there's that element of fear. You know, how much of this is action from fear?
Plenty.
You know, it's like that business. You know, David from Maine was talking about the Jeff Sessions and Don Siegelman. Yeah, word on the street is that Jeff Sessions will make trouble. Jeff Sessions gonna make trouble. You know, damn it, the Clanton gang is in town. Okay, you know, it's high noon, and somebody has to be willing to belt it on and stand out in Main Street and stand and wait for the thugs. And the thing is, what scares me the most, what bothers me the most, Reverbo, is that I fear that there are not enough in our party who understand how you stand up to a redneck bully. I mean, Jesus, am I the only man in America who recognizes the middle name of Jeffrey Sessions and what that historically means?
And that would be?
The junior senator from Alabama's mama and daddy gave him the middle name Beauregard.
Oh, mercy.
Jeffrey Beauregard, and it weren't the first time. He's Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions the Third.
Oh God, what year is it, folks?
I know who Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard was. I know he had lots of balls and lots of guts when it came to firing on an isolated fort in a South Carolina harbor that couldn't damn well defend itself. But I also know, Reverbo, that at Shiloh on a Sunday morning, he was the junior officer to the most brilliant man in the entire American military, a man named Albert Sidney Johnston. And I know that when Albert Sidney Johnston caught a mini ball in his leg and sent his surgeon to tend the Union wounded, while he bled to death atop his horse into his boot, and Pierre Gustave Beauregard was left to finish the job, Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard couldn't. And we lost Shiloh. And now we've got a lovely National Memorial Park there where everybody gets to go and go, hey, look, the South got its ass kicked here. Jeff Sessions is named after a pissant crap weasel. And I'm apparently the only man in America who knows it.
God, they could have fun with this. Isn't there a single one of them with... Oh, Lord.
If there's liberal media out there, don't you ever say Senator Jeff Sessions again. If anybody's listening,
that middle name. Yeah.
He is Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions the Third. Make him own it. Make him wear it. And then remind people what a loser Beauregard it was that he's named after. Because, see, that kind of crap works on Southern people.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like you're just the man for the job. I don't hear anybody doing this. I never hear them calling these people out. And like you say, they're already out. They're waiting for you. Yeah. Sessions is going to make trouble. God, what a laugh.
Yeah. And I'm sweating, I'm sweating getting to Washington, D.C. on June the 1st.
Say, is every NASCAR driver named either Dale, Darrell, Ernie, Kyle, or Donnie?
You forgot Richard, damn it. The greatest of them all.
Change your all, Petty. We had to get out of this somewhere. To some amusement. I ran into Biden on my trip to D.C. He asked about you.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Did you ask
him what it was? What kind of wax he uses on that Trans Am?
No, there were other hijinks that we got into. But I just when he asked me that, I just go, hey, Kincaid and I, we just know some of the same people. That's it.
Yeah.
You'll have to talk to Bob yourself.
Yeah. I don't even have his phone number.
Leave me out of this.
Yeah.
It's a good thing he knows, he's on a first-name basis with some of these security people. Otherwise, I would still be up there trying to talk my way out of some of this stuff. I'll have to fill you in later.
I understand. Can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, it has to do with Everclear, and it has to do with, well, never mind. But, anyway, have a good
Everclear, grape juice, floating fruit.
Well, raspberry sherbet and 7-Up punch. That was harmless until the addition of that.
Yeah. See, I know.
Yeah, and then
and the little girls in the Organdy bridesmaid dresses say, "Funny, I can't taste the alcohol," and you say, "Honey, that's the way it's supposed to be. And what you don't drink, we're gonna pour on you."
Oh, it was. It was like there were some senators and some. You never seen a spectacle like, Mrs. Dick Durbin and there were some of these senators' wives, Biden leading them on a mashed potato line.
Oh, God, they wasn't doing the boot scoot and boogie, was they?
They thought they were going to be listening to the Appalachian Suite. Oh, you have no idea what went on. So.
And you are not here to tell the tale because you are far too much a gentleman.
Correct. Well, I don't know how much more personal you can make it, but I'll talk to you anon.
I'm so glad to hear from you tonight, Reverbo. I'm glad your trip went well.
And it's good to talk to you. I spent time with my daughter. The best part of the trip was spending time with my daughter, driving her back from D.C. down to here. She has one more year to go. She's going to be a senior in college next year. And when she got, and when I finally put her on a plane and I'm walking out of the airport, you mentioned earlier tonight that your son walked in from being outside or something. You said your son looked beautiful.
Yeah.
And I realized how much I loved my daughter and how beautiful she was, she is, and all of this, you just think, you realize that this is the basis for everything we talk about on your show. This is really what it comes down to. All the anger we have and all the frustration we feel. It's because we love. It's because we can't believe in how man can be so inhuman to other men.
Yes.
And that's what just drives us so crazy. And when you look at your son, or when I was hanging out with my daughter on the beach, it's what you think about. And that's the foundation for all of this. And you think, if I had the resources these people had, would I be such a prick?
Oh, don't you do that.
Would I blow up mountains? Would I blow you up? Would I torture you? Would I wreck your economy? Would I make you?
Well, I'll go one other place. Even if you had those resources and you weren't doing that, would you just not care? And those are the people that scare the piss out of me, Reverbo.
I mean, does that come with it? Is that why? Is it true? I mean, at some point, money, the acquisition of money becomes such a...
Well, you know what? I think Reverbo, that is the place where they separate the sheep from the goats. Because, just as a for instance, let's take the two great American political dynasty families.
The Bushes and the Kennedys, perhaps?
The Bushes and the Kennedys. Now, the Kennedys got that money.
Yeah.
And they got the education. And they didn't come from greatness. They didn't come from brilliance. They rose up out of a world in which signs were hung in Boston shops that said, Irish need not apply.
Indeed.
And when they got some money, they started to try to do some good with it. And they built into their family character a notion of public service and a notion that there is an America that is a better America when America is better for all. Now compare that with the Bushes.
Ugh.
The Bushes, as opposed to the Kennedys coming from downtrodden Irish, the Bushes are about as English as you get. And this is not me gooning on the English.
Sure.
For a long time, the Bush legacy at Yale was a legacy of Bushes and Walkers and so forth who went there and learned to be Episcopal ministers. And then the First World War happened. And it was in the First World War that Prescott Bush wrote a bogus letter home claiming to have saved Black Jack Pershing and Marshall Foch together, that Mrs. Bush ran to the local paper, perhaps it was the Columbus Dispatch, and had published and had her son hailed as a conquering hero.
Are you telling me it never happened?
Only later did she find out that it was one of those Bush family jokes.
Oh, one of those, yeah.
Having been educated at Yale, Prescott Bush was briefly stationed at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where he participated in the exhumation of the bones and the not too terribly recently decomposed bones at that of a brilliant man who should be called an American, but by virtue of the laws of the time was not, named Geronimo. And carried those bones back to New Haven, Connecticut, where they were enshrined in the tomb of skull and bones. It was also at about this time of the First World War that the family got its hooks into the military procurement racket. I can't remember which ones, but a Walker or a Bush or some such was an active sublegate, an active fief for John D. Rockefeller, and was in the railroad car business. Another one went into the mercantile business, and another one wound up on the War Materiels Procurement Board of what was then the War Department of the United States government. And from that time forward, the Bush family
has felt they owed exactly nothing to the American people, except for to the extent that the American people can provide them an ongoing public teat at which to suckle. And what I said is that this is where we separate the sheep from the goats. Once you acquire wealth, how you respond to that wealth and how you respond within the civic circumstance, Reverbo, delineates your merit and your worth and determines whether or not your wealth is ill or good gotten. Fair?
Well said. So it's not automatic.
No, you've got to work at it.
If I had these resources, I wouldn't just be a prick. I would have a choice.
Exactly.
I mean,
once upon a time, Don Blankenship was nothing more than a humble accounting student at Marshall University. Grew up working in a grocery store, and somewhere along the way got enough money to convince him that the rest of the people in West Virginia existed to make him wealthy. It is a question, it is a question not of wealth, but of human nature. And there are people with bad spirits, and there are people with good spirits, and there is a very, very bright line between the two.
Yeah, there's no gray area there. We're living in a world where they're going to pump, you know, the oil out till pump the last drop of oil out, and then they're going to also pump the last dime out of our pockets.
Yeah, I couldn't help noticing that my gasoline went up 15 cents a gallon for no damn good reason.
Yeah, I saw that too, which is like 225 or something.
Yeah.
But, well, I guess that's good to know. In case my number comes up and I win that money and I'm going to go down to...
No, see, the cool thing is you win the lottery and you're not going to be one of those people that shows up on some damned expose on cable TV talking about how the lottery destroyed him. Because you're going to understand that giving it away and not giving into your basest impulses are the very essence of the definition of whether you are who you think you are.
Can I just give into my basest impulses just for a little while, though?
Oh, absolutely. I plan to give into my basest impulses by factory ordering a Porsche 911 Carrera 4 Cabrio that I will take delivery of in Germany and be transported immediately to that famous German racetrack where, under supervised conditions, I will drive the hell out of the car and then have it shipped home. And me and Agnes are going to have a blast.
I think that's fair. You're not making money from man in humanity.
But there'll be a bunch of it given away. But, yeah, I'm a troglodyte and a philistine, and we've all got it in us. The question is, to what extent and to what level of success are we able to control it?
I would love to actually be Jay Bears for Tipton. I would love to be the millionaire. Remember that show?
Yes.
That if you had unlimited wealth, it would be, I would like to have someone, you know, solicit. You're going to have to fill out an application. I want to see what you do with it. We're going to give it to you. Let's see how you do. I think it'd be great to do once a month.
See, it was a terrible movie, but I loved Brewster's Millions.
Well, I was going to mention, for anyone listening, the movie, really, that everyone has to see again, assuming you, I mean, I hope everyone's seen it once, is The Magic Christian.
Oh, yes. And here, let's add to the list. Let me also suggest The Man Who Would Be King.
Oh, it's superb, superb movie. I just got finished watching The Magic Christian the other night for about the ninth time, and did you have fun with money like that? Everyone has their price.
You know what? I'm gonna find that, and I think Agnes and I are gonna watch it this weekend.
It still holds up. I mean, and Ringo Starr is great in it, and Sellers is just too much. Oh, man. Anyway, yes, we were going to hang up about 15 minutes ago. But
yeah, but when I don't hear from you for a week or so, it's kind of hard to do.
Well, I got one more for you. I was at my 40th high school reunion while I was on my trip, and I ran into a special guest at this. I went to a tiny school, a parochial school, a Quaker school, actually, in Baltimore, and one of our old history teachers was there, and this guy was a rabble-rouser from way back. He's an agitator. I mean, he talk about walking it. I mean, he's down getting his head beat up, beat in, walking with black people down in Mississippi. And this guy, I mean, this guy, he's done that.
Walking the walk and talking the talk?
Oh, yeah. And he's still a high school teacher. And when I asked him, how come you just stuck with that? How come you never became a college professor? He goes, they're too... They've already made up their mind. I'd much rather teach high school kids. So I got a hand to him. But we were talking about fundamentalists and talking about politics. We're talking about whatever they, what we always talk about, because we're hooked on this. And isn't it great to have in your life, you run into someone who really is an inspiration, some high school teacher, somebody that you'll just never forget. Hopefully, it's like your mom or dad. Well, sometimes it doesn't work, and it's still great when you run into somebody who is an internal inspiration. This guy's, he's going on about how he deals with people who they want to get, you know, mired in this swamp of angry white gods in the sky and just all this stuff. And he said, look, the way he's got it down to something really simple. He said, this is how you explain God. And he said, when people are good to each other, when they treat each other kind, God is there. And that's it.
That's beautiful. I've got my high school reunion coming up in June in Florence, Alabama, and I will not be there.
I'm not going to another one of these either. But isn't that beautiful? I mean, that's pretty much it. You know?
Yeah, it is. The answer, the real answers are simple.
Yeah,
it's putting them into practice that is damnably difficult.
I mean, of course it's a metaphor, but that is it. That God must be here because everybody's being nice to each other. Imagine that.
And you take that and you tie it into that thou art God notion that I think was pioneered by Kierkegaard and sort of co-opted by Robert A. Heinlein. And there you are. And everything gets a lot saner.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
And you realize that the universe expands and contracts, and damned if that doesn't look like breathing.
And you look at little crazy things under the microscope, or look at little seashells, and damn if they don't look like spiral galaxies.
Yes, they do. Everything gets replicated. And you know, I love... you know, the voice of George C. Scott.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've made reference to, if we take one of these babies in, and we, you know. Of course he can do it. But, the little stupid side note, my voice coach in college was the man who was his voice coach for Dr. Strangelove. And, well, even before that.
Is that right?
Yeah, and he said he had such a magnificent instrument, but he refused to take it to all the places that it could go. And he built that voice in Dr. Strangelove, and he turned it into a franchise with patent, and that's all he ever had. Don't let that happen to you. And...
Was this guy British?
No, he was quite American, but he had that whole John Houseman, I'm an American, but I've been taught to speak by the British thing going on for him.
Very classical, yes.
Yeah, exactly, classically trained. I mean, this was a guy who was standing next to Joseph Papp for Shakespeare in the Park
when the famous words, don't just delivered to the method actor, spear carrier in Hamlet, who was emoting wildly at the back of the scene and living his character, and the words came forth, damn it, man, don't just do something, stand there, came forth. But he said, George C. Scott just went on and made a franchise out of that because General Buck Turgidson and George S. Patton are the same vocal person if you watch the films.
Yeah, I guess you're, come to think of it.
But at the end of the film, there's this beautiful moment in that gravelly, gorgeous voice, which certainly was worthy of a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'm going extra innings. I just am. It's 10 till 9, and there's more conversations to be had, so I'm going extra innings. Sorry, Ben Birch. Well, I'll make it right. There's that line that where Patton, who by then has been, is just clearly an inspired madman, says, when the ancient Roman emperors would have their triumphs, there was always a slave walking behind them, holding their crown above their heads and whispering into their ear that they were mortal and this all would pass. Maybe we need a cabinet-level position for that, Reverbo.
Oh, man, you just sent chills up my spine with that.
Because, I mean, I suffice with my own conscience doing that for me. And I suspect a whole lot of us do. But when the roar of the crowd is heady in your ears, you need someone a little closer to your ear going, baby, this ain't real, and you're going to rot just like the rest of us. I mean, could a man who had that whispered in his ear, Reverbo, look at the press and say, well, I don't know how history is going to judge us. We're all going to be dead.
Man, but that man was deaf. It only works if you're here.
Wow, you trumped me.
No, I was just, that's the only place you
can. Man, threw down that ace of hearts and I'm screwed.
God, well, where else do you go? It doesn't work on everybody. You have to have this, you have to be open to it.
Yeah, I think this week's homework assignment for me and everybody else should be to go off and read the Plato's the description of the philosopher king. Yeah, everybody go read The Republic between now and Monday. Quiz on Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll get right on that.
Yeah, let's.
We got to read that, what's his name, Michael Parenti.
Yeah, I think we should, too.
That sounded.
Yeah, because where The Republic was concerned, I was going to say, let's don't and say we didn't.
Yeah, but that guy, boy, you look at some of the comments. I love Amazon because you get to read people's comments about these things, records and books and stuff. And, boy, there's just people piling on this guy about what a communist he is and what a bunch of crap is coming out. And it's funny, I was looking at it and checking some of it out, and I found myself agreeing with it all. So I don't know where that leaves me. But.
Yeah, and I'm getting another email in here. Once again, Stone Cold busted for my non-TV watching. And occasioned by our conversation, Reverbo. Have you seen The Wire? No, I have not seen The Wire. I must see The Wire. I don't know what I have to do to see The Wire, but I gotta see The Wire.
That's what people say. Well, I like that. We've been talking for an hour, and someone emails you and just wants to know if you've seen The Wire. Oh, God.
No, but because that's the connections that we light. These connections don't light up on other radio.
No, we're suddenly talking about TV shows. That's close enough. Have you seen The Wire? Yeah. Yeah, we go from the Roman Empire to... Yeah, this would be good. Let's sum up this entire thing. Let's see. The Republicans, the gift that keeps on giving. No, we haven't gotten there yet. Well,
see, I got about 3 hours more show left in me.
And Ben Birch is going to kick my ass from Elgin, Illinois to Busted Knuckle, West Virginia. But I'm going over.
All right. You should go over. This is absurd to say this, but there's no other way to do it. You just have to dust yourself off, and you guys just have to keep clawing away at it.
Ain't nobody quitting. Because you know what? We don't got to make it personal. Reverbo, it is.
It is. Well, I will continue to listen this evening, so get...
Thank you kindly, and I'm sorry for bumming you out after a lovely vacation. But you know what? I've come to the point where I realize that that's my job in life is ruining your day.
I don't know. It's like my mom who is still bumping around, and she's you just hold out this hope that somehow next week it's going to get better, or I'll have more time for that, and next month or.
Yeah, and I hope that if somebody from Netroots Nation or Democracy for America is listening, they're not sitting there with their little heads in their hands going, oh, what the f- have we, oh, not him!
Yeah, just remember that your friend whispering in your ear. I think you can hear it.
I've been hearing it, I think, since I was born, Riverbo. Since I was born.
Well, we're all the best.
I started getting took to funerals real early, and it kind of had an impact.
Yeah, we tend to do that. All right, man. Talk to you later.
Bye now. That's our buddy Reverbo, our critic at large. We haven't had a conversation like that in a while. That's pretty magic. Hey, Albert, are you still there?
Oh, I know, man. You can't shake me. I'm a pit bull. I got 16 hours worth of batteries on these phones, and it's nice listening to the horn on the line. That way I can walk around and get a beer if I need it. All right. Now, I have, how do you watch The Wire? Do you got Netflix? Because I'm looking at some free month-long memberships at Netflix right now, and I'm going to...
How do I say this without getting myself in trouble? I have been informed that I will see The Wire.
Okay, well, that's good. I'll still give you a membership if you so desire. I had to, give myself, I've killed some good time. I made a nice donation on the thing when I was on hold, and so I got the Netflix, couple people. All I need is, you definitely have one, and so three other lucky horn listeners that are in the chat room, once I get in there, will get a month's membership to Netflix, except John Fox, because I don't think they sent to Australia. Sorry, buddy.
No, down there it's Netflix. It's spelled differently. Okay, I'm going to catch hell for my really cheesy Australian impression there. But, what the hell.
Was? Okay.
Netflix.
Well, I just got to say, I was listening to you the whole time here, and I just have it on my screen, so I got to bring it up real quick, because when you talked about JFK and Martin Luther King, that conversation came up into my head, and it's kind of a theme, and it was actually a theme to me holding and all that other stuff, and forgive me, everyone. I'm asking, in advance. But I'm going to read some lyrics. Ready?
Okay. Just
real quick.
Okay.
I want the ball. I want a party. Pink macaroons and a million balloons and performing baboons and give it to me now. Right? We need... See, I love the Willy Wonka. And in order for us...
I thought that was...
Getting that chocolate factory. We need this chocolate factory, don't we? We're Charlie here. Okay? And we need patience because we are winning. There is no doubt in my mind about this, something you didn't bring up, and I'm just going to have to read a little tiny bit more.
Bust my ass.
Lyrics. No. This is hope. Here's the hope. Ready? We have a president that does know what's up, except we can't get everything done right now. He's got big tank, those big tank crosses and tank traps and dragon teeth, and we have to go in there and destroy them bit by bit. And I think we're finally succeeding in some of them. And this is a major front, because this major front, and this has been my big issue for years, as you know, and I'm not going to get too excited, but I just got to read this real quick. The Obama administration's new drug czar says he wants to banish the idea that the U.S. is fighting a war on drugs, a move that would underscore a shift favoring treatment over incarceration in trying to reduce the illicit drug use.
Saw that.
His first interview, regardless, this is what's beautiful. Regardless of how you try to explain to people it's a war on drugs or a war on a product, people see a war as a war on them. He said, we're not at war with the people of this country. Now, if we have common sense in power right then and there, they can't pull a double bamboozle, you know, shift the queen and the blackjack and all that other stuff. They can't do that because 52% of Americans are in favor of this. 52%. That's pretty huge. It's considering that when I grew up, it was only 24%. And, you know, when Ferg was born, it was only 32%. And in the last 8 years, and I'm telling you, the last 8 years, as painful as they were and as horrible as they were, we are so far beyond that now. Those are the birth pangs of a new human being. That's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a world now that is going to finally really start shaking these cobwebs out of our head. Sure, there'll be some cannabis involved, and there'll be regulation of the $180 billion cash crop, and there's going to be hemp and everything that that entails, which is going to dwarf any $180 billion cash crop. Hemp will be grown everywhere. Hemp will help minimize the destruction caused by coal. Hemp will replace, in a large part, a lot of the energy we currently get by coal, because once we accept hemp, we have wind and solar and all these other things that come into being. It's almost like baby steps. You know, we made this huge mistake back in the early days of the Industrial Revolution. We made it further on with Prohibition. We decided that in order to implement racial, you know, segregation and all this other stuff, we'd use some parts of Prohibition. And now we're realizing that we have a black president. Martin Luther King is without a doubt ecstatic wherever he's sitting. You know, and, you know, I mean, we have, it's right there. It's right there for us. We only have to go through, who comes after Veruca Salt? After Veruca Salt, it's just Mikey, Mike TV. That's all we got to do. We just got to maintain our fear of technology. Oh, my God, he was a prophet, too.
Holy crap, what an analogy.
Oh, my God, right? We conquer our fear of technology, and at the end, we give back the everlasting gobstopper, and the factory's ours. Sorry. You brought it out in me.
Okay, you know what? If this doesn't turn into a blog post, I'm ashamed of you. This is the analogy of analogies. This is beautiful. This is brilliant. You turn this into an essay, I'll ship it, and it will show up on the Horn blog, and I'll bust my ass to get it read.
All right.
After Veruca Salt, there's only Mike TV. Jesus, jumping. You done did it again, Albert. You done did it again. Yeah, that's a moment.
Well, I look at too many pictures of space, maybe, and I definitely, you guys brought up that macro micro stuff, and my God, you know how that affects me. That's like the core of my being, to sit there and look at the macro micro of.
Well, see, and that was the next step that I was going to take with Reverbo, but I got sidetracked or distracted or. You know, my conversations with Reverbo are magic things like they are with you that just go all over the place. This can't happen on commercial radio, you know? And my next step was to say with that macro-micro thing, because I was going to mention the George C. Scott, you know, guy holding the wreath, all this is temporary, you too will die, yada, yada, yada. I was going to take that next step with that. And I was gonna note that when you acknowledge that, you then acknowledge that you're free, and there's really no next step. And that, and that, you know, to the extent that Barack Obama needs someone standing behind him saying the stuff that was said to the Caesar, he also needs some, you know, right after he gets done whispering the Caesar line, the guy whispers to him, by the way, Mr. President, you are, at best, a degenerating piece of one little bit of a chemical making up one gene on a chromosome of an armpit hair of a human being who is little more in his own right than an armpit hair in the universe.
And then it goes into it. And as
and that's not by way of insult. That's by way of comprehending where we all stand. You know, God, what is that website? You done made me run and pardon the clacking. PLEBLUEDOT. .org. No, that ain't it.
What is it? What's the deal?
Pale blue dot. Yeah. A pale blue dot. That beautiful, beautiful the piece of writing from the gone but may prove to be far more important than any Caesar, any general, any president, Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm. Who, it's by the way?
That was Ferg sneezing. He doesn't have his own cough button yet. He's earning that.
Carl Sagan, who by the way, smoked cannabis every day. But sorry.
Yeah. Ferg. This is a photograph taken at Carl Sagan's suggestion by Voyager 1 on February 14, 1990. Mm-hmm. As the spacecraft left our planetary neighborhood for the fringes of the solar system, engineers turned it around for one last look at its home planet. Yeah, I read. I cannot guarantee that I won't cry.
I cried when I saw that.
One last look at its home planet. Voyager 1 was about 6.4 billion kilometers away and 32 degrees above the ecliptic plane when it captured this portrait of our world. And Carl Sagan wrote, "Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have had some privileged position in the universe are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not,
For the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.